Welcome to Trust the Badge. In this episode, I interview Chief Dave Ogden of the Windermere Police Department, who describes his goals, commitments, and the process of rebuilding trust with the town of Windermere. Chief Ogden takes a stance on many issues facing law enforcement today and is passionate about being a leader to his police department. With Chief Ogden, I believe that the Windermere Police Department is in good hands and will strive to be a community-serving police department. With that being said, we'll start off with Chief Ogden introducing himself.
My name's Dave Ogden. I'm the current chief of police of the town of Windermere, where I've been actually just over a decade, going into my 11th year, 37 years in law enforcement. I retired from the Orange County Sheriff's Office after 27 years, having a wonderful, blessed career over there, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit today. And law enforcement is really just a passion of mine. Possibly get a chance to talk about this too. I was thinking about leaving law enforcement several years ago, but really several things kept me engaged. And again, I'm sure we'll talk about some of those things. And one of those big things is being trust in our community and trust with our law enforcement officers. But I hold a profound appreciation for the spirit of volunteerism in our community. I believe in servant leadership. I love our local community, and I actively participate in lots of different kinds of boards and committees so I can stay active in the community. And I think that just serves as a positive influence for the folks that we have in here. Personally, I'm married. I have four kids. We have a blended family, and my wife and I unfortunately did have a son who died from a rare terminal condition in 2012. But that's part of our story as well, and that's part of who I am, who I get to talk about, and how my character has evolved over the years. And understanding our trials and our tribulations, the things that we've been through, have made us more passionate about certain things in our life. So glad to be here, and I appreciate the time. I tell everybody the first two things I tell everybody I get a chance to meet or when I get a chance to speak is this: the greatest gift you can ever give everybody or anybody is your time and attention. Give it freely. And the worst thing you can ever lose in life is trust. And we've all probably been in those situations where we've lost some trust, and we know how important that is. So thanks again for having me.
Thank you, Chief Ogden. That's a really strong story. So just to start off, what encouraged you to become a law enforcement officer?
You know, it's funny, like anybody else, and I say anybody else, I've been in this line of work for a long time. I can tell you my life was shattered when my first dream didn't come true, which was being some kind of professional ball player. For me, it was soccer, and that wasn't a reality. Oh, wow. But I did enjoy it and had a good time. You know, but I think when I got out of that, I enjoyed the team concept. I really just felt connected to that. And then the next thing was I felt connected to wanting to do something that was just bigger than myself. And I worked out in a local gym, which with a bunch of guys who were law enforcement officers, and they talked about some of the things they were doing. And listen, I'm not going to lie. When I was younger, it seemed fun. You know, they're chasing bad guys, getting in vehicle pursuits, all those kind of things. But more importantly than that, these guys really kind of expressed, I think, just what an impact they felt like they had in their jobs. And I just thought that was important. So that really drew me to this career.
It's really interesting. And knowing that you've been in law enforcement for a very long time, starting off at the Orange County Sheriff's Office, could you just share your experiences and your duties within the expansive jobs you had at the Sheriff's Office?
Yes, sir. You know, I started pretty young. I think just still 18 years old, almost turning 19 when I went to the academy. And I was so young, as a matter of fact, I started in corrections. So Orange County Sheriff's Office at the time had corrections. They no longer have the corrections, but I started there, went to the corrections academy, spent a little bit over a year there, and quickly wanted to get out of that. So I switched over and I did what's called a cross academy and went as a patrol officer. So in 1986, I started in corrections. In 1988, January of 1988 was the first day on the road as a road patrol officer. And I've had, again, a blessed career. I spent time in road patrol. I've spent time in narcotics, working undercover work. I spent time in intelligence. I actually finished my career there, but started there earlier. So working everything from undercover drug work to narcotics to task force gangs, actually even working, helping out, assisting with undercover motorcycle operations, so motorcycle gangs. In addition to that, I went back to patrol a few times, back and forth as I kind of got promoted, started the first bicycle unit up in south of Apopka, went from there to a tactical unit, a community policing unit. And at that point in my career, I started to kind of get promoted. And as I got promoted, I went from the traditional ranks of corporal, sergeant, lieutenant, and so on and so forth. And I got promoted and spent some time in the training division. So I ran Sheriff's Office Training Division for 4 or 5 years for the 10th largest sheriff's office in the country. Got promoted to captain. I went to the motorcycle unit. I worked a couple different units that were in there, volunteer, patrol, reserve. We actually had 150 reserve officers at the time, and finished my career back in patrol as a sector captain. And then the last couple of years as sheriff's office, I was called a fusion center director. So I was assigned to the Central Florida Intelligence Exchange as their director, running intelligence operations for them in a criminal intelligence division. Fusion centers were set up after 9/11 as a result of 9/11 and the 9/11 commission to information sharing and collaboration for our country to help keep us safe. And you're probably hearing or seeing a lot of intelligence information going out right now with what's going on, you know, currently around the world in this time. You know, commensurate to my time at the sheriff's office, I also did one other thing, which was a part-time position, which was I spent nearly 15 years on a sheriff's office SWAT team. So I rose to the rank of team leader on that team, and we executed all the high-risk search warrants, drug warrants, things of that nature, anything that was high-risk. We did, and again, rose to the rank of team leader there, which was kind of a separate promotion system than the sheriff's office as well, kind of a very different, unique promotion system with the SWAT team. Very blessed with my time at the sheriff's office, enjoyed it, and certainly have used a lot of that information and knowledge that I shared when I got a chance to come over to the town of Windermere.
Wow, you've been through every job. I mean, for the sheriff's office, I would say of a lot of experience compared to definitely some other people. So you're a veteran at this, and it's really good to know that you really care about policing and you're very passionate about it. Shifting the topic to your current job at the Windermere Police Station, how has the community's relationship with the Windermere Police Department changed over time since you were chief?
I think it's changed a lot. You know, I think the first thing you hear me saying, I talk a lot about leadership and team building, and I think that's the number one thing that we're called to do as leaders. But I think the easiest way to explain it is that we built trust. Prior to coming here, unfortunately, it was a general embarrassment of the police department and what occurred and what had happened. I don't even like to talk about it a lot anymore. I did teach a class the other day called Leadership Through Adversity to a group of people that are lieutenants and captains at different agencies around right now. And I say it like this, before I pat myself on the back, I want to make one thing pretty clear. You know, the former chief of police that was here did 9 years in prison. So the bar was set pretty low. So all I had to do was not go to jail to look good. And I certainly had no intentions or plan to do that. But I think we as a team have done so much more than that. So I think we built trust. That's the biggest thing. And I've already told you that that's the greatest gift you can give is your time. And the worst thing you lose is trust. And the agency had lost trust. The town had lost trust and the citizens had lost trust in the agency. As a matter of fact, to the point where by all measurable effects, it probably should have been disbanded because of a small police department. Thank goodness it wasn't. We wouldn't have had this opportunity to rebuild, rebrand, and reimage this agency to what it is today, a fully functioning agency, which has the trust of the community, the trust of the team. We're a fully accredited police department, one of the very few small, tiny police departments, you know, around probably in the country. There's a very small percentage that are actually accredited police departments by the state of Florida. So we built trust. If you're going to ask what we've done now, and I know we do that. The community loves us. Our officers know them very well, even more so than I can imagine at the sheriff's office because it was so busy over there. And here we get a really opportunity to instill a completely different level of service than I ever could imagine before. And I think that's the biggest thing that I learned coming over here. I thought I knew community policing because I ran community policing unit for a little while, but I truly did until I come over here and got to know how we can integrate even more in a community. And I'm still amazed to this day, some of the amazing opportunities that I get to do with the community. My wife and I facilitated grief share. Believe it or not, I had a local church here, and we've had, I think, about a dozen of our residents that came through our grief share. So for 13 weeks, we get to kind of walk alongside them and help them through their struggles and their grief. And one particular family was the worst crime that we had had in our town a couple of years ago. That was a double homicide. So I share this not as any kind of special thing that I've done. I haven't done it. I just use my experiences in life to help shape me, to help other people, to influence them. But I've been placed in just very blessed and unique positions that I truly, to be honest with you, never even could have imagined. In 2001, when I first wrote my personal goal of being a chief police in a small police department, I couldn't imagine the opportunities that we have now that are before us. So I'm very fortunate.
Wow. It seems like you're up for the job, clearly. I'm not going to ask anything about what happened beforehand, but it sounds like you're very serious and very passionate about when it comes to rebuilding that broken trust with your community. Many police departments in the area, Central Florida, they fortunately have good police relations, but it looks like you're doing your job and trying to make sure that your community is just as same. And I really appreciate that. But when it comes to those initiatives that you talk about, what are these specific community policing initiatives that you have done in your time as chief of police?
Well, we've done a lot. Well, first of all, I think it's a matter of having a level of service and the right amount of police officers to police. That's a tough thing right now in this country that's going on. And what I mean by that is that right now we just unfortunately had some car burglaries last night, but we're going to work those like they're homicides of somebody who personally committed a homicide to your family. So you get that level of service, which is really important. The other thing that we do is we're engaged in just about everything we can do in a community, from the town events that host here. We host lots of town events, from food truck nights to, we just had light up Windermere night, to what we call a holiday hoopla. Our officers are engaged in every single one of those events, whether they're working them as an off-duty job, whether we're invited on our days off, on our time off. And I can tell you in other agencies, you wouldn't do things like that. I just participated in a wine tasting event last week from the local Rotary here. But we are engaged day in and day out with our community. Because I sit on so many boards, I just believe, again, as a servant leader, that we should be involved not only in our small community. We're very blessed. We have a small, tiny, affluent community. But our greater community, you know, about the 4, 5, 6 square mile area, does have some areas that are underprivileged and things of that nature. And I sit on local boards, like the West Orange Dream Center, the Hope Center, and a few other boards, so that we can help engage with those communities. And I get a great opportunity to bring the things that I do back to this community, because we do have a community here that actually is very, very philanthropic, and they like to see what's going on in the community and how they can engage and how they can help. And so we get an opportunity to bring those back in here. So we kind of fuse those two worlds and those two cultures together many times. And it's really worked out well. You know, a few months ago, I've been involved with an organization called Sleep and Heavenly Peace Bunk Bed Bill. You may have heard about them, may not. They started out on Mike Rowe's Dirty Jobs several years ago. Great organization and very simple, simple mission. Build beds for kids who don't have beds. Really, I just love it. It's just simple. Think about the mission of that.
Great.
And the domino effect of that, right? You think about, I've never imagined that my kid wouldn't have a bed. I've always had a job. I always had good money, or at least made enough money that I can never imagine that my kid would have a bed to sleep in. But I know from my days at the sheriff's office, locally being around here, the communities that don't, that I've been to, that they didn't have a bed, they slip on the floor. They didn't have those very basic essential needs. So my wife and I have been involved in this organization for several years, and we brought that to the town. And so once a year, we raise $10,000, a town does. And right out in the middle of town, we bring an assembly operation and we build about 50 plus beds for kids that don't have beds. We go back to the warehouse, and then the community just loves to engage. But the real work happens later on, when sometimes, usually on a weekend on my days off, I've had presidents come out and kind of meet up with us. I get our personal vehicle, and I'm engaged in this organization. So we go pick up a bed and we go deliver it to, you know, a child who doesn't have a bed. And that's where the real magic happens. And that's where I have some just incredible, amazing stories. And really one of them I'd like to share, you know, or it's actually two times, but I have delivered beds to two areas that I have had shootings in the SWAT team. And can you imagine leaving an area where somebody tried to shoot and tried to kill you and thinking, there's no way in the world that I would ever come back to this area. I get a chance to come back to these areas now, just in my shorts and my flip-flops or shoes and t-shirt, because I don't come as a police officer. I just come as Dave and my wife. And we get to serve in a different capacity. And we get to have the same people who may have shot at you or may have cussed you out or may have done some other things. Now they're hugging you and crying and thanking you for the service that you've done. So I tell people all the time, you know, I'm a person of faith. I say, you can't outserve God. You do something that is just goodness. And I think that's what law enforcement is. I truly believe we are designed to do good in our line of work. But when you get an opportunity to do that, you just feel good and you know you've done something good. And I get to bring law enforcement officers. It's not a work thing. You know, we do the work thing when we build the beds. But other than that, I have my officers show up on their days off, on their time off, and they deliver a bed to a kid who doesn't have bed. And I had one officer one time who was just struggling with a tough time. He was going through a divorce, about 6 month divorce. Then we went and delivered a bed. And he said, you know, this is the best I've felt in 6 months. Think about the impact mentally, physically, and spiritually that has on an officer just to do something like good in your life. And that's what we try to do.
Chief, it sounds like you're very involved. You already have everything done, especially for the town of Windermere. I'm sure they're very appreciative for all of your efforts. Knowing that you've done so well to this point, in the future, do you have any other sort of plans to build and maintain those positive relationships? And do you have any other, or maybe the same idea that you'll use in the future?
Yeah, we'll continue to use these ideas and we'll build out some more in the future. The list is just long, the things that we've done, and we've been so fortunate, you know, and we've taken some negative things and turned them around to positive. And March 22nd, 2014, we lost our first officer in the line of duty here. Now I've experienced that many times before, but this was 14 months after I came here. So again, we were still just rebuilding the agency at that time. And since that time, we built a Windermere Police Department Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization that I and several people sit on, that is in honor of our officer Robbie German, who was killed in the line of duty. One cool thing that about him is that, as I said, there was quite a bit of chaos before I came, and he was already here, and he was a good officer, and I knew that. And when I met with him at first, he said, you know, he's going to leave and go to a big police department as a young officer, and I don't blame him. I said, I'll help you get there. But within about 6 months, he said, no, I'm going to stay. I want to see what direction this agency is going. And I love what you're talking about, your command philosophy and your personal principles and guiding principles, how we're going to promote this police department. And he wanted to stay. So in honor of him, we created this foundation. We've raised over $500,000 since then. And Jester, we don't have enough time to sit down and talk about the amazing things that we've done in this community with that fund, with those monies. We're helping kids with terminal illnesses, to taking some kids to Disney one day, to just getting involved in the community, paying for the bunk beds or paying for different things. So it's been a blessing. So yeah, I think one of the greatest gifts you can ever give somebody is to honor them, right? And we get to honor him and his family. And we promised that to them. We stay close to them to this day. The family is welcome in our police department. They come here. They come to our Christmas party every year. I talk to them pretty regularly, and it's something that we owe them. This officer gave his life in the line of duty for every resident here and every police officer here. So it's the least that we can do is to honor his name and his legacy.
That's really good to know. When it comes to police foundations, they are great organizations that should be way more common than they should be. I know the Orlando Police Foundation, they're quite large, they're applicable to their police department, and they're very efficient. I believe that these types of organizations should be more frequent throughout our nation. Thank you for what you've done with the Police Foundation. Now, shifting the topic towards how law enforcement is viewed, it varies across many communities throughout the nation. Some people just view law enforcement as a whole as terrible. Some view it as it's just my community. And I just want to get your opinion. What do you believe are the most significant challenges facing law enforcement today? And how do you address them within your community?
Yeah, I think we're going around, seeing around it. Yes, I am very fortunate, but I've seen both sides of this, right? In my time at the sheriff's office. And even here, sure. You know, at some time here, we've had a few negative things along the way, and you kind of see that and feel that. And during the last several years, we have, you know, small protests and things of that nature. Yeah, I think the problem is politics, media, and I'm going to be honest with you, the defund and demoralize and disrespected police movement has done more harm to law enforcement community and will continue to do more harm. Let me make that point. It will continue to do more harm for decades to come. That is the fight. If you are a leader in this line of work, that is your fight. And when I say it's your fight, you got to be careful. I always say that, you know, it's not a character flaw to not trust someone yet still treat them right. So we want to treat those people right, but we want to make sure that our message gets out there. And that's why you see many more police officer agencies, like you said, having nonprofit organizations. They have a social media outlet. They press the information ahead of time because they know the news is the news. It's been the same from day one, from my first news interview, I think it was in 1994, when I took down a big drug gang up in Zellwood, Florida. And I'd never been on the news, and I got me on the news. And the very first question was, why did I go to a minority community to choose this operation there? And I didn't choose that.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of learned initially right off the bat. I'm like, whoa, they're just about getting the likes and the clicks and everything else. Not really about pressing the right story. So no one person in a community or organization can thrive when you treat them with utter contempt. And we just can't do that. That's psychology 101, right? You don't treat your kids badly and then expect them to turn out good. And that's what we got to start doing. And I will say this too. I think a lot of people have stopped. I think you're seeing a big cultural shift in this, in the country. I certainly definitely see it in the town of Windermere, no doubt about it. We're very fortunate for that, to have seen that happen and occur here, and to have built that trust, you know, in our team. You know, trust isn't a group of people who work together. You know, trust is a team of people who trust each other. It's a group of people who trust each other, and that's real important. So I think that politics, the media, and the defund, demoralized, disrespect police movement has done harm. And how do we combat that? I think you as a leader set that tone. You absolutely set that tone every single time. And it's important. It's important for you to live by your set of values, live by your principles, by what it is that you do. And, you know, you don't violate those principles. And we consider ourselves a value-based organization. I tell my officers, every officer that comes in here, I spend 4 hours with them in first couple of weeks going through how we established this agency, how we picked the three, our three, honor, integrity, and service, what each one of those means and what it means to live by our guiding values. Every time I get a chance to speak to somebody, I tell them our guiding values. If you were sitting here today, we're all electronic right now, but I do keep this on my calendar, on my pad. And believe it or not, every month, at the beginning of the month, matter of fact, it's about to be December, I will write my guiding principles down here. And I'll share those with you. And I write them down because I want to make sure I live by them. But more importantly, I can easily forget them. Or if I got a stressful situation, I've got to talk to somebody about discipline, I'll kind of sit down and kind of go over and go, this is how I want to lead. The first one is to maintain a constructive stance. You know, I always try to tell people what I stand for, not what I stand against. You know, social media is the opposite. You can go to Facebook, Twitter, whatever it is you want to know, it's X now. And you see everybody talking about what they hate, what they dislike. Well, what do you stand for? And yet use that, maintain a constructive stance. The second one is respect and empathy. Your personal convictions, whatever they may be, should never be a catalyst to treat other people poorly. And if they are, you know, it's not a good conviction. It's not something that's a good set of values for you. The third one is acceptance without approval. There's a lot of crazy things going on in this country, to be honest with you, that I don't approve of. But in my position, that really doesn't matter. I accept that those things are happening, and I understand I have to work within the confines and to get the best thing done. You know, the fourth thing is this is big. And I can tell you, you know, I kind of had to learn this over the years. To have a positive influence means you have to understand your job isn't to fix people. You know, sometimes we can't fix our own selves. We've all probably been through some real trials and tribulations in our lives. And I shared with you that we lost our son. We watched him die for almost 4 years. So that was a very big trial. And I wasn't the best a person that could be. But that's just too big a burden for anybody, any one person to simply share. Here's what I say. Simply be a positive impact in the lives that whoever you get that gets contact with you each day. You know, in SWAT, I used to say micro wins equal macro wins in life. Be consistent. Just look for those little wins every single day. And that's what we've done here. It took us several years. The micro wins turned into the macro wins for us. And then we have to be consistent. And the last thing is servant leadership. It's just got to be modeled. You know, my first SWAT team supervisor, I'll never forget him. At the end of my SWAT seminar, it was the hardest thing I'd ever done in my life. Physically, mentally draining. And at the end, my supervisor came up to me. He wasn't my particular supervisor. He's my first SWAT team commander. And he said, how was it? And I said, this was hard. I couldn't believe how hard it was. And he said, if it was easy, anybody can do it. You're just not anybody. And that really resonated with me the rest of my life. Never choose to be anybody. The police officers aren't anybody. And you get an opportunity to speak into people's lives every single day. Just make that little micro win. They're going to remember those kind of things. Don't try to save the world.
Thank you, Chief. Starting from your points on how law enforcement has been critically viewed as malevolent through the media, which I completely agree with. Most of the time, the media will get a 10-second clip, whether it would be the officer guilty or not, and then try to get more clicks and views on it. And it really does harm the overall view of law enforcement. But in podcasts like this, I want to create the initiative in order to end that criticism of law enforcement nationally. And talking about your goals with your officers and what you like to exemplify to them and how you show your leadership to them, I think that needs to be a bit more common. I believe that spreading those kinds of messages to officers around the countries from their police departments, their chief of police, I feel like that would help the officers and overall help the police department. And then in the end, make the community feel safer and knowing that their law enforcement cares about them and that their law enforcement is in good hands ultimately. I really appreciate all of that. Specifically, when you talk about you've been on both sides of how you've seen law enforcement be hated by the community, whether it is locally or nationally, what do you think is the specific common misconception that the public has about law enforcement that needs to be changed?
That we're anything other than them. I mean, Sir Robert Peel, the founder of law enforcement from New England, actually said, "We are the public and the public is us. You know, we're not robots. We're not perfect. We make mistakes and hopefully we learn, become better from them." Listen, I hope and I believe 100% that I have a lot more wisdom and perseverance that I do now at 37 years later than I did at 3 months in. And it certainly takes time. You know, nothing happens in a vacuum. Nothing happens quickly. It takes a lot of bit of time. There is very few professions. Think about this. We're one of the only professions in the world that you can view my file from 37 years ago and find out if I came in late, used profanity, was rude to somebody, or maybe gave them a ticket and they were unhappy about it. How many civilians think they would live that way? They wouldn't, you know, and right. That's just amazing. And so again, I want to remind them that we're you and you are us. We're the same. We want the community to be the police officer. So listen, I want police officers to understand that we hold them to higher regard. Absolutely. We hold them to a higher standard and they have to live to the standard that comes with the job, right? We have to do a background investigation and everything else. But I think the most common misconception is that we're just these robots, that we can do everything. Think about this. You know, we have shootings, school shootings all around the country. And much of the community wants police officers to be Navy SEALs, right? They want to run, jump, jump over the bad guy, hurdle things, and take a single shot. And as you're flying through the air and take out that bad guy, and everybody wins. And at the same time, we want them to be mental health professional counselors. As we respond to so many mental health calls for service, right? You should be a counselor and be able to talk that person down. And you do all this with maybe a 2-year degree or something like that. Most law enforcement officers at least have a 4-year degree now. We encourage our guys to have that and even go further. So again, we're just people, just like everybody else, you know, but unlike everybody else, where the common public may experience 1 to 3 significant crisis events in their lifetime, a 25-year police veteran will see over 800. So in that ways, we're not like them. And there is some dynamics that come with that. So again, you know, as we're, you know, we're just like you. However, we do see the bad things in life. How many, when's the last time that you called 911? I don't encourage this, but you know, just to have an officer come over and say hi and thank you for your service, or hey, would you like a piece of this? And we'll say pumpkin pie, this for Thanksgiving. That just doesn't happen, right? You don't call 911 when life is going good and you're about to have a nice party and you want to invite the police over. Now, I do get those emails from our residents. I just got one earlier today for Thanksgiving tomorrow that have the officers that are coming by stand by. But think about that. And if we invest some time, the first thing I told you, right, is the greatest gift you can ever give anybody is your time and attention. Give it out freely. That little bit. People ask me what they can do to police officers. You don't have to pay for their meal. You don't have to do anything else. But if you just stop and say thank you, wow, believe it or not, that can make a huge impact on somebody's day. You could have never known what they just saw, just had to do, or what's going on in their life. Because we're all the same. We're all going through this crazy thing we call life on this world together.
Thank you, Chief. Personally, I believe that is absolutely true in everything what you just said. So just to break it down, number one, law enforcement, they're just humans, just like the rest of us. We shouldn't be holding them to a standard where
They have to be superheroes and do tasks, which clearly not many people can do. Secondly, we need to start appreciating law enforcement more, you know, whether it's just a kind gesture of a thank you. I believe that that should be way more common than it is. Personally, I like to say thank you when I see a police officer, obviously when they're not busy. Clearly, they risk their lives for us every day. There's no reason not to say thank you. And it's really those tiny messages that help them along the way as well and really encourage them that law enforcement is the profession they need and that that's what they really want. The better morale of law enforcement we have, the better our communities are, and the better our communities are, the safer we are, and the better trust we have overall. It's a really good domino effect to have by just thanking law enforcement officers when you see them. It doesn't take too much energy out of your day, and you just go on with your day, and the police officer just feels better after all. So I believe that should be way more common than it is. You brought this up just now, but I just want to go into the specifics of it. What specific scenarios do you see that put law enforcement on the downside when projected by the media, whether it is use of force or what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. It's use of force. And, you know, one of my things I've been a use of force expert for quite a while. I don't even think I mentioned, but commensurate to my law enforcement duties, the only thing I've ever done longer than being a law enforcement is a martial artist. And I've done that for over 40 years and owned my own Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu school, Gracie Claremont, sold that a couple of years ago. But it's been a huge passion of mine. And I also have a consultant firm where I testify on behalf of law enforcement officers, mostly in the state of Florida, and getting back and do that a little bit more. And I think the misperception about use of force, you know, it's dynamic, it's quick, it's ugly, it's not anything that's fun. And then, of course, everybody second guesses you. The entire world now with social media second guesses you the next second. And remember, the news is new, right? In the word news is new. Whatever they can get new, that's different. That's the bottom line. They're not interested in feel-good stories. They want hate, controversy, and to stir up things. Now, we have to provide them information, and that's what we do. We're transparent. We're open. We provide that information when we can. So I think it's important for us to kind of get that story out there when we can and get all the facts out there that we can, when we can. And we can't always do that. And sometimes it is best to kind of hold everything back until you get all the exact information. So I think, again, that's the toughest thing. You know, if you would look back at, there's been a commensurate increase in this country's population over the last 20 years. Go back and look at that now. There's, you know, going from, go to like the 1990s, you know, 275 million to now they're saying we're probably into 330 million people. And, you know, law enforcement stayed generally about the same since about 1990, except for now, you've seen a decrease. They're saying there was 800,000 probably about 5-6 years ago. Now there's a decrease. I've seen some of the stats that say there's actually under 700,000 law enforcement officers around the country. That's simple math, right? That's simple math. If the reality is you want police officers to be more community police officers, and there's a higher demand to respond for calls for service, and those calls for service has increased, how is this happening? It can't happen. I interviewed somebody yesterday who wants to come over here, came from a larger agency, and she wants to come here because we're a community policing agency. She goes, all I do, I want to help people, but I go from call to call to call to call. Because many of the agencies have this, you know, their ratio number is just too low. We're very unique because we're very small, but we're at like a four to one ratio, 4 to 1,000 here. So we have a big, but again, being a smaller agency, it's kind of tough to even put a numerical number when you get some of the larger agencies that are 1.5 to 1,000 residents. You can't police that way. It's impossible to police that way. Matter of fact, it would be better if you're a robot at that particular time. So, you know, getting back to the, you know, school thing, we want Superman. We want the mental health counselor. We kind of want it all. And, oh, by the way, we're going to defund, demoralize and disrespect you all we want. And then we're just going to cut that down. And society is paroling more and more each and every single year. Again, I get back to, it's a simple math problem. We need more officers out there. We need more officers that have better leaders out there. Not everybody's designed to be a leader. That's one thing we probably won't even get to talking about here that I get to share. And some of my leadership classes is, how do we promote leaders? And we promote leaders, you know, the wrong way. We talk about performance-based issues, which are important, But we have very little to no metrics to measure trust. Think about that. Any place that you worked, somebody gets promoted because they do the job well. They know the A, Bs, and Cs. They know the policies, the procedures. They know everything else. Matter of fact, the person that gets probably promoted is the person that knows that the best, the micromanager. But he's the person that nobody trusts. They don't like. They won't follow him into a gunfight or a gun battle. And they won't listen to him when he talks about we need to be building trust in the community. So we've got the paradigm all mixed up. And this is one of the things I talk about in law enforcement to make this change is how do we get better leaders? We get better leaders by understanding a better metric system for evaluating trust. And one of the small things that we do here, when you go for a sergeant's promotion here, in addition to the performance-based metrics, because everybody needs to know the job, you will get extra credit when you participate in outside things such as the bunk bed build, such as maybe you do something with your church, maybe you do something with the Rotary Club, whatever the case may be. You've got those things documented. I give you credit for that. I want that person that on his day off, he's delivering beds to people in the community because he's not doing it for a paycheck. He's doing it because he's demonstrating, he's doing it because he's got genuine care for the community. But what he's doing is he's demonstrating his character. And people follow people with good character.
Talking about defund the police, I really want to talk about that with you because I know that you have such a strong stance on it, just like I do. And I completely agree with you. It is one of the most detrimental movements of our nation because nothing good comes out of it. There's so much evidence that defund the police just doesn't work. I mean, it doesn't achieve what the people want. And actually, it just worsens the police department and overall the community. It spikes in crime rates. Really, there's no benefit to it other than the fact that maybe the protesters are happy that they were successful in defunding the police. And ultimately, they're probably dissatisfied in the results. So I just want to talk to you about that. In your experience in all forms of law enforcement, hopefully you've never had to deal with the defund the police in your specific department and had your police department defunded. But why is defunding law enforcement such a bad idea?
Well, again, I think I've covered a lot of this because
we
need more law enforcement officers out there, not less.
Right.
We need more in the community to protect the community and to engage with the community. You know, even though we didn't have anything here, we did, after George Floyd, we did have a couple days where we had some small protests. And we had an incident around here, which I think is a great example of what's going on. You know, people just are jumping at it. Listen, every generation wants something they can attach to. And I think a lot of people attached to what was going on in that just because they felt emotional about doing it, really weren't sure what was going on. Just like right now, very few people truly understand what's going on over in Israel and Palestine and all the kind of stuff. They really don't. Because you almost have to have a doctor degree to really kind of get into this and understand it, what's going on. But we had some guys, we had some folks, we had about 120 folks marching in here, didn't apply for a permit, didn't do all the right things, which they should do. Basically, it was a young group, a very young group, and they blocked a traffic circle. And somebody got out of shape, and it was a big old pickup truck, old country boy. And I'm like, oh, here we go. I was here that day. And started honking his horn, and everybody surrounded this car. So I went over, just tried it with a calm voice, tried to calm everybody down, explain to the driver what was going on. I said, you need to settle down a little bit. And then I asked who was in charge. And one lady said that this young man was in charge. I said, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And he said, I don't talk to police. And I said, well, what are you doing out here if you don't want people to communicate with you, for you to get your message across, if you won't talk to anybody? And the young girl said, you need to talk to him. Now, he would never talk to me. He didn't want to talk to me. And we quelled the situation. But that's what you're dealing with. You're dealing with people who have no interest in helping. It's you know, their only interest is advocating what they want to advocate for. I don't think they even really know that, what they want to advocate for. But I absolutely 100% agree that we are going to continue to see the repercussions of the defund the police movement for the next decade and a half, probably. I mean, no doubt about it, because it has hurt police agencies all over this country. I keep up with that with Milwaukee and all the different areas that are going on. It's significant. And again, what you've done is you've changed the culture. The hardest thing to do is to change a culture. You've disrespected people so bad that nobody wants to be a part of whatever it is that's going on in that particular agency or that particular area. And if you do get somebody to come in there, what are you going to get? You're not going to get somebody with the highest level of character. And why should you? If you get a young guy who is experienced, who's got a little experience, he's got a 4-year degree, he's got a family, do you think, you know, if this guy's got half a sense, he's going to go to an area that is encouraging to funding the police? Why should he do that? He absolutely probably shouldn't do that. And those areas are going to hurt for a long time. As opposed to that, you're seeing areas like our areas and others that are doing well. Not that we don't have little skirmishes, not that little issues don't happen, and not that police officers don't do bad things. Chancellor, I've done this for a long time. I have, unfortunately, over my career, arrested police officers. I've had to fire police officers and demote them and issue discipline. There is nobody that wants to hold police officers more accountable than other police officers. They do not want that bad reputation or that bad name. I can tell you that for sure. But this department and many, many departments that I know, the most departments that I know, hold people accountable. And do sometimes, you know, bad apples get in? Yes, but it does not spoil the whole bunch. That's for sure.
The last part especially, I believe, is true. There are bad police officers out there that do not deserve their jobs whatsoever. Those law enforcement, however, should not be the ones representing the majority. I want to make that clear in every way possible, and I try to make that clear in every single episode as well. Law enforcement as a whole, the wide majority, almost 99%, I believe, they're just good people. I mean, they want the job, they want to help others, and they simply just want to be police officers who can benefit their communities. But in reality, there are police officers out there who do not deserve their jobs. They simply are not qualified for their jobs. And I like to make it clear, though, to the community that we should not look at them as the majority of law enforcement. So just putting that out there, thank you, Chief. For those law enforcement officers out there that are reaching out for advice, that need someone to talk to, honestly, and just need another voice out there from a police official like you, what message do you have for any current or future law enforcement listening to this interview? And how can they change the perspective of law enforcement in the future?
I'll kind of get back to my first story, just kind of share with everybody, you know, if it were easy, just anybody can do it. I don't believe those professional law enforcement officers we're talking about that are just anybody. I think it's amazing what they can do. You know, I couldn't be anything I wanted to be, right? Professional ball player, soccer player, whatever the case may be, but I could be everything for me that my creator wanted me to be, and even more. I try to tell people to find their shape of who it is that you are and be consistent and committed to excellence every single time. And when I talk about shape, I have an acronym for that. You know, what are your special skill sets and abilities? What is your heart? What is your passion for? What are your abilities? You know, some of us are very athletic. Some people are non-athletic, whatever the case may be. You know, what is your purpose in life? And then what's your experiences? What have you been through? The experiences that I've been through in my life has really shaped me to the person I am today. And part of that is understanding your experiences help you to be what I call a vulnerability-based leader. You gotta understand that that's important in life. You know, I share with my people the struggles and the trials and the things that I've been through. And people are afraid to do that because they think, well, they may use that against you. Well, I can't use it against you. I use it against myself. Whatever tough things that I've been through my life, and how it is that I've overcome those things and become a better person, right? That my goal for me is become a better man, a better husband, a better father, a better leader. And that's really what I want to do. My idea of success is to make other people successful. I've been doing 37 years. You know, I know that I'm only 57 years old. I started very young, as I told you, but you know, I'm planning the next couple of years of leave. And we have promoted from within this agency last year for the first time, everybody within after a couple of people left. So make other people successful. If it's an easy job, just anybody can do it. This is not an easy job. If you're in this job and you've been in here for a while and you are a good police officer, you're just not anybody. Take some honor in that, and take some honor and not pride in a negative way, but honor and pride in what that badge and what it means and the opportunity to build trust. The best thing you can do in life is build trust with somebody. Building relationships is the bottom line to building teams. And if we're building teams, if we're talking about a team in an apartment, team in our community, team in our county, in our cities, our state, and in our country, It was micro wins, again, equal macro wins. Stop trying to save the world. Just try to make a positive impact on one person's life today, and you will be so much better for that.
That's a really good message. Thank you. Ultimately, in your opinion, how do we, the public, the community, how do we trust the badge?
I think by everything we're saying, but living by your values. Living by your values. You know, everybody knows, we've all been to these classes where they teach you how to write mission statements and goals and objectives, and that is so important. Absolutely all super important. But you can't decide anything. And again, this is how we train our guys here, that we're a value-based police department. What does that mean? We actually sat down and I went through everything and agreed as a team 10 and a half years ago when I explained to them what this meant, that we're going to live by these guiding principles and these values: honor, integrity, and service, and what each one of those means. If we live by our values and those guiding principles, that's how we start getting people to trust the badge. We had COVID. You know, COVID happened. Everybody got to go home, police officers and firefighters and whatever, the emergency managers, they had to work. All of a sudden you find yourself heroes. Stop relying on outside factors to give you that hero status. That's not what we're looking for. Just live by your values each and every single day, and you'll build trust. That's the only way to build trust. There's no quick fix to any of this. There's no quick fix to building relationships. There's no, you know, you don't build your marriage, you know, in the first day, right? You build it over time and energy, putting energy into it and building trust and having failures and rebuilding back again and doing those kind of things. So just understand, invest in people, invest in time, build trust.
Thank you. That's a really good message to end off of. And before we end the interview, do you have any final thoughts for the listeners?
Yeah, well, we have a couple openings. You're really interested in getting to law enforcement. We still have one or two openings at the Windermere Police Department. We would love to have you. And we do have a great community. I will say it all the time. Unfortunately, I've gained a little bit too much weight because it's Thanksgiving time and Christmas time is coming up, and they will fill our room over there with some nice gifts and cakes and things like that. And it's really nice. It's a great community. But again, we get to be a part of the community. So if that's something you're currently in law enforcement, and you know what, you feel like you're not valued where you're at, man, I'd love to have you. If you are a value-based person and you take a look at our website and look at what our vision and our values and our statements are, and you feel like you fit that mission, shoot me a call. And if not, give me a call either way. And we'll help you get somewhere that you feel valued and where you can make an impact on people's lives.
That's right. For those of you listening, the Windermere Police Department has your support and has your back. They would love to have you there. So if you're considering law enforcement or currently in law enforcement, the Windermere Police Department is right there for you. So Chief Ogden, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate all of what you had to say, and I'm sure the listeners also did. Thank you.
Right. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Trust the Badge.